So I was asked by a few people just to go over the point that we ended off on yesterday, maybe to expand on it a little bit. So let's begin with that. That essentially we were trying to create a possible model. This model is not the only way to see things clearly, and there's much tweaking that one could do. But just to illustrate one possible path to kind of seeing how some of the parts can come together. So we had discussed two of the major topics that led us into this discussion was one, the role of the mother in the chinuch experience. Again, I feel like I should always emphasize a caveat that when it comes to capital ches chinuch, the mother is crucial, the mother is vital, the mother, practically speaking, plays a humongous role, the mother, halachically, in terms of obligation, plays a humongous role. The capital ches chinuch of the basic raising of a observant and committed Jewish child, there's no question the mother's role is way, way up there. The question that we're talking about is our lowercase sugya of chinuch, which should be considered for our purposes synonymous with the term the obligation of a child to do mitzvos. The obligation to have a child perform practical mitzvos. That's what we mean when we talk about chinuch, should not, for the purposes of today and yesterday, should not be confused, as it very easily could be, with the larger theme of capital ches, chinuch, education, and the like. So with that, we saw that there was a machlokas about the role of the mother. The Gemara in Nazir suggesting, at least according to one opinion in the Gemara Nazir. We haven't even really spent so much time looking at the back and forth, the two opinions of the Gemara Nazir. There's only really one opinion in the Gemara Nazir that suggests that it's about the father and not about the mother, and it's not clear at all whether we should paskin like that view. That's a whole discussion. But there's that one statement there that sounds like the woman is not obligated, the mother is not obligated. And there's the Tosus Yishonim that makes the statement that gives two answers to the question of whether there's a chiyuv to be mafrish, a child from Isser, and asks how could that coexist independently, so to speak, of an obligation of chinuch. So if you have an obligation to teach your kids to do mitzvos practically, so then clearly you're not allowed to let them do averos. So Tosfos has two answers to that. One is that maybe it's only specifically about positive mitzvos, and the other that it is about the father only and not about anyone else, including not the mother. So that was one issue that led us into the whole discussion. The second issue was the question of, is the child personally obligated in mitzvos? That's why every time we talk about the chiyuv, we have to say it in a vague, kind of a blurry way, because we're trying to leave open both possibilities. We say there is a chiyuv, d'rabbanan, of a child doing mitzvos, but we purposely leave it a little bit open. Do we mean is that obligation on the child, or is the obligation on the father? And a number of Rishonim, notably Rashi and Maseches Brachos, also the Ramban that the Ran quotes, a number of Rishonim seem to maintain that the Chiyuv is on the father specifically. And as we noted, there are at least two reasons to say that. Right? One is just out of necessity. Maybe there's no tool to obligate the child, going back to our Drabbanan discussion, that if Lo Sasser is the basis for obligations midrabbanan, you can only be chayiv in mitzvah Drabbanan if you're first chayiv in the mitzvah of Lo Sasser. Somebody who's not obligated in anything wouldn't be obligated in mitzvah Drabbanan either. So maybe it's just a practical issue. It's practically speaking impossible to be mechayiv the child in mitzvos even on a level derabbanan. So therefore the only chiyuv that could exist is the chiyuv on the father. Or you could say it more, not because you have to say it like that, but because that makes sense as far as the mitzvah. The mitzvah chinuch literally would mean to train, would mean the father trains the child, so therefore presumably the mitzvah is on the father specifically to do the training. So two reasons to support this idea that the mitzvah should be primarily on the father. However, other Rishonim say no. Other Rishonim say that the child could be considered mechuyev b'mitzvos, could be considered obligated in mitzvos on a level of the Rabban. And then we noted that if we want to say that the child is obligated, okay, there are enough Rishonim who say that, but it's very difficult to say that the father's not obligated. That seems like it's pretty explicit from Gemara's that he is obligated. And again, it also makes sense to say that he's obligated. So if you say the child is obligated, then presumably you mean that they're both obligated. The child is mechuyev and the father is mechuyev to make it happen. Okay, so far so good? So those were basically the building blocks that got us to what we had then left off with yesterday. We haven't said that part yet, but those were basically the building blocks, the discussion about where the mother fits in, and the discussion of whether the child is a part of it or not. So I think it was Avi first and Sam.
So I don't understand how the child is tied up in anything.
Yes, that's a question we have to spend more time on, because as mentioned, some of the Rishonim are coming from that objection. It's just, practically speaking, impossible to mechayev. Are you saying because of the losos, or are you saying even beyond that? Right, well, it depends what you mean. If you're not worried about the losos issue, right, so then what does bother us? So the lack of das, presumably. Yeah. Right? So the question is, even if there's a lack of das, but there are various stages along the way to das. So clearly, when we're talking about an infant, so we understand, okay, there's no concept of an obligation. But when you're talking about a child who's 7, 8 years old, when you, Baruch Hashem, you'll be surprised when you have kids of your own. You'll be surprised how quickly they catch on, and how quickly they understand, much younger than you might expect. One of my children, who's not old enough yet to stumble upon this tape on Y.U. Torah, maybe someday they will be, but they won't know I'm talking about them. So, say one of my children is under the age of 5. So, one Friday night, I came home from shul, and this child offered me a candy. And they said that I can't have it yet because I haven't made kiddush. So then the child wasn't really copying that concept. So he said, "You mean you're fleishig for this? Or you mean you're milchig for this? What are you for this?" So I said, "No, I just can't eat anything before kiddush." "Oh, only grown-ups?" "Kids too?" So that concept actually is something that specifically has a role in halacha, which the question of eating before kiddush and children, maybe we should save a story for that. And we'll get to that also. But in any event, you'll be surprised just the various nuances that kids can pick up on at an earlier age. So the concept of having some responsibility is less of a problem if we're not worried about the little sasare. Right, so, and we have to still figure that out, and we want to still spend more time on that. But just to address this part, so with those building blocks, the question of the role of the mother and the question of the role of the child, so we mentioned the following mahalach, which exists in some achronim, and again, you can tweak various parts of it to your preferred approach. But the approach was like this, that what if there are two components to chinuch? Right, we could phrase this as either or. Right? We could say, what is chinuch about? And we could phrase that as an either or question. Maybe it's one or the other. Or we could say that they might both exist. Right? So is chinuch simply about training, like we find sometimes expressed in some of the language? Lahargilo b'mitzvos. Right? It doesn't make sense that we can expect that the child is going to turn into an adult and in the blink of an eye, all of a sudden, just step right into the whole mitzvah experience without any kind of preparation, neither functionally or in terms of desire to continue that path. So it's about the preparation for adulthood. Or is it about something else? Is it about perhaps the idea that we have technical chiyuvim, and we have people who are technically mechuyev in mitzvos, but even lacking that, it doesn't make sense to have a person who has kedushas Yisrael not have a chiyuv in mitzvos. You're not going to have anything that's going to distinguish this individual from somebody who doesn't have kedushas Yisrael practically. That seems very tricky. And therefore, maybe for that reason, we say to whatever extent it's possible, should have them do mitzvos to whatever extent it at least makes sense. It at least is possible to call what they're doing some kind of a mitzvah act. And as we mentioned, this is not an issue when it comes to women, because women are only exempt from a handful of mitzvahs. Mitzvah seishas, man grama, is a very minor part of the whole counting of mitzvahs, so we don't have that concern. The concern applies, and therefore, and the reason I point that also is therefore we don't find that when women are pater from mitzvah seishas, man grama, for the most part, we don't find anyone saying, but the rabbanon, they should do that. Because we're okay with saying these mitzvahs, they're paturus lagamri. But when it comes to somebody who's not chayv in mitzvahs at all, so then there's a concern that that could really result in somebody without any functional component of Judaism. So then we start talking about, well, maybe at least mid rabbanan there should be a chiyuv. So within that, the question was, so maybe ketanim should do mitzvahs for that reason. And we know that this could have huge ramifications, la halacha, a topic which is discussed at great length in Poskim. I'm happy to go into greater length if people are interested. Maybe we'll get to it. But the question of, let's say, somebody who is not chayv in mitzvos for medical reasons, and unfortunately there's no expectation that's ever going to change. So in that circumstance, would we say that chinuch applies? Or is chinuch only about the preparation for a future obligation in mitzvos, in which case the concept wouldn't necessarily apply? And it has huge, huge ramifications, la halacha, because very often such individuals will have to be institutionalized, and the question of whether it has to be an institution that is observant of halacha, and that provides food that is kosher, that's going to affect this. As I was discussing with someone this morning, this is completely separate from the question of whether the medical care itself is a reason to be doche kashrus. That's a question you could ask by anybody. But the question here is whether there's even a chiyuv to keep mitzvahs in the first place under such circumstances, which wouldn't necessarily require the refuah to rise to such a level. That's a separate discussion. Ariel?
Yeah, so this, the person who's not be chayv in mitzvahs once he's bar mitzvah, whatever, mm-hmm. age, so he'd be technically, possibly, he'd be chayv for chinuch until 13.
No, then it might apply his entire life. But it might be that it's just dumb that we don't want somebody who's Jewish not to have any Jewish practice. Right? So then, even if the person is much older than 13, maybe.
So that's not a function of chinuch.
Right, but maybe that's what chinuch really means. That's what we're not sure. Right? The idea that we have a 10-year-old do mitzvos, why is that? Is that because we want to train him in mitzvos? Or is it because the Maisi is a Jewish kid, he should be doing the mitzvahs that he's able to relate to?
And same thing with the Jewish adult.
Could be, yeah. So that's a major, major issue, huge halachic ramifications that emerges from that discussion. Okay, so what was suggested as a possible combination of those thoughts is, what if we were to say that they're very possibly both true? And that both components are there, which makes a lot of sense, is certainly very possible. And therefore, you could say that when you have your 10-year-old boy, for example, so the father has a specific chiyuv of chinuch to train him in mitzvos. And that's all about the father. Why? We're not sure. Maybe it's because it's an extension of the mitzvah of Talmud Torah. Maybe this is perfect synergy where we left off last year with Kedusha and Daf Chav Ches, the whole sugyas of mitzvahs ha'ava la'ben. And there the Gemara has various responsibilities that are specifically about father to child. So maybe it's something connected to that. But whatever it is, that seems to be a father obligation. But there's another component, especially according to these Rishonim who say the katan is mechuyev. So you say that the katan has a personal obligation because he's got to do what he can relate to. And if that's the case, so it's not so likely that's going to happen, at least initially, by itself. Clearly, whoever can help has got an obligation as compared to yesterday to a hechsher mitzvah. That's just a clearly, evidently needed step to get you to where you need to go, or where someone else needs to go in this case. And therefore, it makes sense that the parents who are there for everything else that the child needs, should also be there for the performance of mitzvos. And that, it doesn't make sense to distinguish between parents. Presumably, the father and the mother both have that role. So one could say that that's the idea. Let's say if we want to plug it in just directly to our Gemara, so we could say that the child has an obligation to sit in the sukkah. Let's say an 8-year-old boy has an obligation to sit in the sukkah for his own purposes. And the mother has an obligation to help him out. Right? There's nothing in our Gemara that excludes that reading necessarily. Right, especially maybe you could say that it works better with our Gemara. So look at the language of our Gemara again, Beis and Beis. So the bottom part was Yod Kol Maaseh Lo Asa Ela Al Pi Chachamim. So Hachi Kam Luchit Kitom Rabbanim Ketanim Hayu U Ketanim Peturim Min Asuka Kev Neshiva Hevu Yafshu Del Havi Behu Chad She'en Ho Tzarech Li'imo. At least one of them is at the age where he can be without his mother. V'chitem Ru Katan She'en Ho Tzarech Li'imo Midrabanan Hu D'Mechayev. Right, it sounds like we're saying he is obligated. The language very much sounds like it's an obligation on the child. V'ihi b'drabanan lo mashkecha, but the mother, she's not going to worry about the rabbanans. Tashma, so we see that's why we also were taught the law. He wrote, kol ma'aseh lo aseh al pi chachamim. So it sounds like a pretty credible reading is that the child is obligated, and then fill in the words in between, it would make sense that the mother should care about that. The mother should recognize her responsibility to make sure that that happens. And therefore, that's understandable. Now, Jed suggested this morning that maybe this is also consistent with the strange phrasing of the Tosfos Yeshanim in Yuma. That the Tosfos Yeshanim wants to say that women are not a part of the mitzvah of chinuch. And then they ask the question, well, so wait a minute, what about Heleni Malka? What about Sukkah Daf Beis and Beis? So among the approaches that Tosfos has is this language of maybe she was involved in Chinuch Mitzvahs Ba'alma. Right, something like that. Those are the closing words of the Tosfos Yeshanim. So what does that phrase mean? So Jad was suggesting that maybe it means, like, consistent with this, that this specific chiyuv that translates to the father must make his son sit in a sukkah, so she doesn't have that mitzvah. But the idea of a general responsibility to make sure that the children are fulfilling their responsibility to act like Jews, so that she should be responsible in. And maybe that's what the Gemara means. Maybe that's what the Tosfos Yeshanim means in interpreting the Gemara. It's certainly, I think, a viable interpretation. It's a difficult phrase to understand otherwise. So I think it could mean something along those lines. Okay, so any further questions about that? Does that address the questions that were asked this morning? Yes?
So the last thing would just be like, would be this hefshir mitzvah that the woman would also be shy to. So is that her sole obligation, or is that her chinuch with a lowercase c obligation, and then the uppercase c obligation, and she still even has a bigger role even still?
There is more than that, yeah, because the real uppercase ches chinuch is about the future, you know, is about raising children who ultimately will be fully committed and observant Jews. So that's really the uppercase ches. This is still a lowercase version of that. We're going to need a third case because it's not exactly the chinuch that we attributed to the father according to that possibility that the father is the only one obligated. It's kind of the third possibility. I distinguish it between the uppercase ches because focusing on raising committed adults is still going to be the higher priority. I think I mentioned last week that Meir Schlesinger had that mahalach, which he said that Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach agreed to him about, that if convincing your child to participate in mitzvos at that age to a very specific, rigid degree is going to alienate him or her from growing up as from Jew. They're going to have such hostile memories because of what they were forced to do that it's going to taint their whole life, which, as we know, unfortunately happens sometimes. So then it would be legitimate to say that the uppercase Ches Chinuch has got to be the highest priority, and this is less of a priority. So that would be true here also, that, you know, according to what he's saying, Rav Shlomo Zalman would agree that if, let's say, one of her sons here says, no, I'm miserable sitting in the sukkah, and it's going to be a traumatic memory that's going to mess up the rest of my life, so then she shouldn't do it. So in this case, for that purpose, we're talking about a lowercase chinuch compared to the uppercase. So we really need three cases to distinguish. Hi.
What if they're about chiyuv, like they're already at age 13? Is there a chiyuv to still try to have to do the mitzvah?
I mean, as opposed to just saying it's his responsibility.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that gets into interesting questions. You know, there's still clearly, and clearly b'zman hazeh, there's still, you know, nowadays, it's clear from every perspective that we have a delayed maturation process. You know, there are definitely many articles about generation, whatever we're holding in right now, XQ plus 6S, whatever, whatever the numbers are. But this generation, you know, talk about moving back in with your parents in your 30s, you know, whatever it is. No question that we have a very delayed process. But simply from looking at certain realities of halachic sources, we clearly see that. We clearly see just the expectation that a child is going to be a fully functioning adult at the age of 13 or 12, together with also Gemara's elsewhere about what age was it expected that the parent's going to financially support the child, together with the age of potential marriage. It's clear that we are maturing at a slower rate nowadays than what was expected in the time of the Gemara. So, for sure, the parental role also shifts, and no question that parenting is a very active responsibility way beyond the age of 12 and 13. That being said, presumably the lowercase ches shifts. Now you're dealing with someone who's halachically an adult, and so the sugya that we're talking about is not really relevant, but it's further along the lines of maybe the uppercase ches of Shinatim Levanecha because of the parental responsibility, and it's also more relevant to larger questions of both enabling Averos and encouraging mitzvos. So it's interesting, just to give a direct parallel, when you're dealing with somebody who's just dumb, another person, not necessarily because of parental obligations, but you're worried about their spiritual well-being. So we know that we have a concept of Ne'ivr L'Ostitei Michshol, the Torah prohibition, we're not allowed to enable an Avera and the like. So here, it's mentioned Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach as quoted by Rav Meir Schlesinger, but Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach also has a very similar psak in that area, which you don't have to hear secondhand. It's in the Tshuvas Mincha Shlomo, you can read it inside, where he talks about Lifnei Iver Lo Sitei Michshol. And here again, it would be helpful to draw a distinction between capital Lamed Lifnei Iver and lowercase Lamed Lifnei Iver, because that's essentially what he says. He talks about the question in Poskim about whether you're allowed to offer food to somebody who's not going to make a bracha. Do you have to worry about that consideration? Well, there are many other cheshbonos in that shiloh. But the scenario he describes, let's say you have a non-observant Jewish man working in your garden, and let's say it's 110 degrees outside, and he comes in about to collapse, and he asks for some lemonade, and you're sitting there on your couch in your air-conditioned room with a whole snack bar next to you, and he's like literally about to die on your floor, and he asks for some lemonade, and you're thinking, well, I should probably say no because he's not going to make a bracha. So Shlomo Zalman says, you know, if you look at things from a very narrow lens, you could be right, but you could be right that there's a question of the responsibility of the bracha in front of you, But there's also the uppercase lamed lifnei iver, that this person will understandably come away with the conclusion that observant Judaism means let people collapse on your floor and while you're sitting on the couch with your snack bar, and that's not going to be very productive. So there he draws a very similar distinction that you have to think about the big picture and what's going to be most supportive of a general religious existence, more than the narrow issue in front of you. The narrow issue in front of you also comes with a lot of responsibility, it's no question. But when it's going to be a conflict between the broader issues and the narrow issue in front of you, so then it's legitimate and perhaps wise to focus more on the broader issues. So it seems that tshuva actually is about lifnei iver, but one could clearly draw a parallel, especially when we're dealing with somebody who's older, and it still makes sense to be very thought out in what do you focus on and what is your goal. And I think there's no question we would say that if you're dealing with a 16-year-old daughter or son, that one still should very much make sure to keep things in balance and choose their battles and decide what's going to be most effective in getting past the stage and looking to a productive and committed adulthood rather than being medaktik on every kutzel shel yud at that age, even though they're technically completely mechuyev in mitzvos. Jebediah?
Where's that tshuva?
I think it's Lamed Hey. If you look in Chelak Aleph in the Menachem Shlomo, he has at one point short tshuvas. I forgot whether short tshuvas are numbered by themselves or not. I think it's either Lamed Hey Bechlal or Lamed Hey of a smaller section of short tshuvas, but it's in Chelak Aleph. Okay, so that still leaves us with a couple. There's a lot. Like I said, chinuch is just a big thing. You know, people devote their whole lives to chinuch. So, you know, we devote a few weeks to it, you know, what can I say? But, so there are at least a couple of other questions that are emanating from this. Okay, one question that I'm trying to get through, well, it's allowed to be tomorrow, is the question of just how, and I think you've seen some marmakomas on this, I can give you a few more, definitely have a few more overall to give you for tomorrow. But the question of just how kosher, so to speak, does the mitzvah have to be? Just how perfect does the mitzvah have to be accomplished when it's done by a katan? That's something which is also going to emerge from this whole discussion. But let's just, in the few minutes that we have left, or less than that, let's just pay attention for a second to the glaring question also of how can you be mechayev a katan in mitzvos at all if there is no obligation of lo saser? So how does that work? So when we talked about mitzvahs drabanan, so we noted that this is a problem that the Ramban has to confront, right? Because the Rambam, if you recall, the Rambam was the one who says that lo saser extends to all mitzvahs drabanan. And fine, according to him, it's all very well and good that we perform mitzvahs drabanan, that we observe what we call a rabbinic Judaism today because of lo saser and its binding nature on us. But what about the Ramban? If the Ramban does not believe that it's included in lo saser, how do we get to that? And we mentioned a couple of theories, and among them is the notion that it is Ratzon Hashem, and that when you can figure out what the Ratzon Hashem is, so then it makes sense that one should do that, that one should follow the Ratzon Hashem, even if it's not presented as a tzivoy. So it's interesting to think about how you come to that conclusion here. One, if you want to say, and the time I asked at the outset of the sugya, is this, what kind of drabanan is chinuch? Is it a siyag? Is it something like that? So maybe you could say it's comparable to a siyag if we want to talk about their training component. Or if we want to say that here we expect you to do mitzvos automatically at age 13 with no preparation, that's just not practical, that's not so responsible as a plan. Maybe you could compare that to a siag. It's not, a siag as an active concept is a little bit hard to relate to, saying that you should do something as a siag, but it's not out of the realm of thinking. There are those who connect Chanukah and Purim as active mitzvos, as kind of a siag for losing faith, you know, compared to that the idea that you need to support faith through Yom Tovim about Nisan. So it's only to support the future preparation, future performance of mitzvahs through preparation. But if we say maybe even more so, this extra side, which would work well, because this side that the Kotan is himself obligated, so how do we find him obligated? This is obvious question a little bit, or part of obvious question. So presumably that when you see that there is a value to an action, and we see that the parents are doing mitzvot, so clearly it's something which is valuable, but the katan doesn't have a chiyuv. So why does the katan not have a chiyuv? So presumably it doesn't have a chiyuv because technically we can't be mechayiv somebody without das. But if it's clearly valuable activity, it's why the parents do it, so then it makes sense, hasvar no senes, that the children should do this also. If it makes sense, and we'll have to discuss a little bit more, where mitzvos may have different breakdowns this way that may not make sense. And just to draw a mashal, I'm sorry, I'll just keep you one more minute to draw a mashal to this. Maybe I'll give you this gemara to look at, just so it'll help you flesh it out in your mind. So we have a concept called chatzi shir, which if you think about it, may really be a good parallel to this. That we know that if somebody eats a kezayis of matzah on Pesach, he's yotzei a mitzvah. And if somebody eats a kezayis of chametz on Pesach, he's chayiv karis. He's in violation of Navera. And if somebody eats a kezayis of chazer, he's chayiv malchus. He's punishable for Navera. So the Gemara says that the chiyuv onesh is for a kezayis. But what happens if you eat less than a kezayis? Is that nothing? Is that totally no problem whatsoever? So the Gemara says, no, it's definitely a problem. It's called chatzi shir, and chatzi shir is prohibited. So it's machlokes why it's prohibited. Is it prohibited midrabanan? That's the view of Rish Lakish. Or should we say that it's prohibited min haTorah? That's the view of Rabbi Yochanan, and almost all the Rishonim passing like Rabbi Yochanan. That chatzi shir is asur min haTorah. So why is chatzi shir asur min haTorah? So the Gemara has two possibilities, and then two possibilities is one possibility. One possibility is a pasuk, not relevant then to the sugya, pasuk about that. But the other possibility is a sabara, there's a logic to it. So what's the logic? The Gemara has the line that, and again, I'll give this tomorrow to look at, but the Gemara has the line, kevin dechazi l'zdrufe yisura ka'ochil, which sounds like it means that since a little bit more of this amount, you're going to be in trouble. So it's aser. So some understand that as kind of a siag deraisa maybe, that look, you're at risk of finishing the whole item, and therefore it makes sense, you shouldn't have this much because you're not going to be able to stop one potato chip, you can't stop at one, so it makes sense to say, don't go further. But other achronim understand it differently. And they understand, no, that if the Torah says that eat a kezayis of this, you're in huge trouble, it's telling you this is bad. It's just technicality, you need to have a certain minimum to be liable. So we know you're not going to be liable without a kezayis. But it's labeled as something bad. So to have anything doesn't make sense, because if it's a bad substance, you shouldn't have it in any quantity. Even if technically we're only going to hold you liable at a certain threshold. So it might be a very good model for mitzvos, for chinuch by mitzvos. That when the Torah says you're going to get schar mitzvah for doing something once you turn 13, or you're going to be held accountable for an avera once you turn 13, it's saying that that is a good action or a bad action. And therefore it makes sense that even if somebody, pachos mikishir, less nikazayis in age, is not old enough to be technically obligated, but they should see, okay, these are good things and bad things, and it makes sense they should do the good things and not to the bad things. God?
And would we say that it applies to derisives?
That might be. That might be. That's a good question to talk about. But for now, let's leave it at that. That's fine. So we'll have to address that. I'll leave you with one more question as I let you go. I'm sorry for the overtime. But it's interesting to note that the Ramban is the one that we had to explain why we could be mechayiv ourselves in Rabbanan without Losasar. But it's also the Ramban who has a problem obligating the katan in mitzvos on a level of the Rabbanan. So that should be somewhat of a conflict. That's something Blinetta will also have to address tomorrow. Okay, everyone should have a wonderful day.
Should be only good things.